So tonight I want to speak about the importance of forgiveness. This is a practice that's very near and dear to my heart, to be honest with you. I'll perhaps talk more about that later. But I sort of introduced this idea of forgiveness when I was talking last week about a metaphor, the difficult person, for one with whom we have difficulty, is a sort of forgiveness process. But what I want to do tonight is go much deeper into the significance of forgiveness and why it's so important and how we can actually consciously practice it. Because so this is not official metta, but it's very tightly related to metta and I think important. So I want to start just by doing a little background about how predominant forgiveness is in all cultures and all traditions. There's someone named Bishop Desmond Tutu, and if you're not familiar with him, he was the Archbishop of South Africa during and after the time when apartheid was on, and then it ended. And
was of Cape Town, and I was born in Cape Town. Just
yeah,
sorry
yeah,
to interrupt.
it's okay. So this is what he said. He said, "Without forgiveness, there is no future." Pretty blunt, strong statement. Without forgiveness, there is no future. Now he was, of course, referring to the situation in South Africa after apartheid had ended, but he was also echoing a prominent Christian theme. The black population is sort of like I had been oppressed for a long time. Many people had been in jail, including Mandela, who then became the president. And there was the tendency to just sort of want to get back, revenge. We're finally in charge, just to get some revenge. And Desmond Tutu and Mandela both very strongly discouraged that. And they discouraged it for this very reason. Because if we don't forgive, then there's no future. It'll just be tit for tat, and go on forever. That cycle. And they were trying to break the cycle. They actually started something called the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which helped foster this idea. But let's just look at in the Christian tradition itself to start with. There's Jesus with the disciples at the Last Supper. And what does he teach them? Among other things, he was of this I command you, love one another. Oh, there's a good meta instruction, right? But then he teaches the Lord's Prayer. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. So he's speaking directly. It's the last chance he's ever going to have to teach these guys. He knows this. And this is what he's talking about, forgiveness. And then the next day, there he is, nailed up on the cross. And he's looking down at the Roman soldiers who nailed him up there. And what does he say? He says, "Father, forgive them." So he wasn't just talking the talk. He was walking the walk. This is like he felt very strongly that this is really an important aspect of being a good person. But the interesting thing is, if you start looking at other religious traditions other than Christianity, where it's so prominent, it's everywhere. This is from the Siddur, the Jewish Book of Prayer. "I forgive all those who have may have hurt or aggravated me, either physically, monetarily, or emotionally, whether unknowingly or willfully, whether accidentally or intentionally, whether in speech or in action, whether in this incarnation or another, and may no person be punished on account of me." That's very thorough and precise, right? But But then this, how about from the Quran? Okay, the other side of the story. O Lord, we have sinned against ourselves, and unless you grant us forgiveness and bestow your mercy upon us, we shall most certainly be lost. And then from the Bhagavad Gita, one of the most important scriptures in the Hindu tradition. This is where God in the form of Krishna is teaching Arjuna. That's what the whole theme of this book is. He's saying, O Arjuna, radiance, forgiveness, fortitude, purity, freedom from malice, absence of pride, arise in one born of divine nature. So right there at the start of the list, after you're radiant, you have to have forgiveness. And then, how about in Theravada Buddhist tradition? There's a chant that monks chant when they are taking ordination in the Theravada tradition. This is one line from that chant. May the triple gem forgive us for any wrong we have done to it out of heedlessness in thought, word, or deed. The triple gem is the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. So everywhere you look, this theme of forgiveness keeps arising in all traditions and all faiths. So why is it so important? Why this prominence? Why does this one stand out among traditions? And here's another line from Desmond Tutu. To forgive is not to be altruistic. It is the best form of self-interest. Pretty shocking statement when you first hear it, right? To forgive is not to be altruistic. It is the best form of self-interest. It's an act of healing. It heals yourself, heals the other, and heals the relationship that's involved in this space between yourself and another being. In the context of the Eightfold Path, forgiveness is right effort. It's that making sure that unwholesome mind states don't arise and doing what you can to get rid of unwholesome mind states that have arisen. That's two of the four steps in the Eightfold Path. And then by doing the practices, you get the other two. You actually put practice, then you do what you can to actually create a wholesome mind state and do what you can to preserve it. So I want to read. There's lots of people who've talked about forgiveness in various ways. This is Sharon Salzberg from her book, Loving Kindness. In order to be released from deeply held aversion for ourselves and for others, we must be able to practice forgiveness. Forgiveness has the power to ripen forces of purity, such as love, and affirm the qualities of patience and compassion. It creates the space for renewal and the life free from bondage to the past. When we are held prisoners by our own past actions or the actions of others, our present life cannot be fully lived. The resentment, the partially experienced pain, the unwelcome inheritance we carry from the past all function to close our hearts and thereby narrow our worlds. The intention of forgiveness meditation is not to force anything or to pretend to anything or to forget about ourselves in utter deference to the needs of others. In fact, it is out of the greatest compassion for ourselves that we create the conditions for an unobstructed love, which can dissolve separation and relieve us of the twin burdens of lacerating guilt and perpetually unresolved rage. Quite strong language for Sharon. It's much more difficult to forgive than to not forgive. It's much more difficult to forgive than not to forgive. Political leaders seem to rely on this fact It may be much easier to unite the people with a common bond of hatred than with shared love. It's not so easy to access that place inside of us which can forgive, which can love. Remember, to be able to forgive is so deep a letting go that is a type of dying. You must be able to say, I am not that person anymore, and you are not that person anymore. Forgiveness does not mean condoning a harmful action. Very important. It doesn't have nothing to do with condoning or denying injustice or suffering. It should never be confused with being passive towards violation or abuse. Forgiveness is the inner relinquishment of guilt or resentment, both of which are devastating to us in the end. As forgiveness grows within us, it may take an outward form. We may seek to make amends, demand justice, resolve to be treated better, or simply leave a situation behind us. So that's it's, you can see how important this is on the heart level, the level of what's arising in our heart. And basically, there are three aspects to forgiveness practice, the practice itself. Asking for forgiveness, forgiving others, and forgiving ourselves. And there are three, these are three distinct parts of the whole practice, and I want to look quite closely at all of them. First of all, there's asking for forgiveness. I have this underlined and bolded in my notes here. This is a courageous act. Basically, when you're asking for forgiveness, you openly admit your mistakes to others. It is dangerous to do this, to ex because you're exposing your heart. You're putting yourself in a position of weakness, in a sense, towards the other person. I have a little bit of poetry here to read. So this is a poet by this poet Michael Looney, and it just describes what I'm talking about so nicely here. It's a poem called When the Heart. When the heart is cut or cracked or broken, do not clutch it. Let the wound lie open. Let the wind from the good old sea blow in to bathe the wound with salt and let it sting. Let a stray dog lick it. Let a bird lean in the hole and sing a simple song like a tiny bell and let it ring. It's quite poetically describes what we have to be willing to do when we're asking for forgiveness. But let's look at the alternative. As Sharon said, it's like it's better, it's harder to ask for forgiveness than not. But here's the flip side of that coin. Not seeking forgiveness typically means we are caught in an unwholesome mind state. We're caught in some story about how we've done something, and oh my God, aren't I horrible? I hope they don't find out. I hope they found out and now they don't like me anymore. All those stories we tell ourselves when we know we have acted with less than skillful intent, shall we say. We are averse to acknowledging our failures, our unskillful acts. That's a normally averse reaction. Don't want to admit to any of that, please. And because we're caught in shame or remorse, or we've shut them away completely. We've done this stuff, and then we somehow or other build this wall, mental wall around it, so it just doesn't come up anymore. We've stashed it away. And we can be quite skillful at hiding these things. Though they come back at all surprising times sometimes. These are all really painful mind states. There's nothing pleasant about this. And you also have to accept that you can expect nothing from the other. You simply need to ask for forgiveness. You can't expect anything. Because it's like, well, I'm going to ask for forgiveness because then they'll like me. No, you just ask for forgiveness without any desire. Like this is like the near enemy of metta, right? The same near enemy, wanting something when you do this. You can't want anything from the other. It's an act of accepting yourself as you are, of letting in the dark side instead of pushing it away. And we all have a dark side. We're not all pure innocent light all the time. And you're actually acknowledging it and letting it in and really like looking at it, right? There's this great saying attributed to the third Zen patriarch, which really aptly fits this. A wise man is one who is content with his own imperfections. A wise man is one who is content with his own imperfections. Note the word there's content. Doesn't mean you like them. Doesn't mean you're so happy you have all these imperfections. But you're content. It's like, okay, that's the way things are. And I can do something gradually to, improve and be somewhat less imperfect. But I have to accept the fact that I'm not perfect at all. And I never have been up till this moment, at least. So that's the idea behind asking for forgiveness. And this has sort of two aspects. I want to talk first about the formal practice part. So if you want to go into your chat box and find that phrase, the phrase if you I'm going to be looking at. And there are distinct phrases. I'm going to talk about the phrases themselves, and then we're actually going to do some forgiveness practice, and I'll give you some instructions on how to do that. But the phrase is really simple. If I've hurt or harmed anyone, knowingly or unknowingly, I ask for your forgiveness. It's really straightforward, right? The key here, I think, is when you're admitting that there's a good possibility that you have hurt or harmed someone, that you're not perfect. You're admitting that you're not perfect. And you may have some specific thing in mind, but it's not just sort of this general, with the practice, it's just this general admittance of imperfection. And then knowingly or unknowingly, how often is it we say or do something? Probably not particularly mindfully. And we cause pain for someone else. We hurt someone else or some group of people. It's just, and so we have to admit that we may not even know that we have caused harm, but we still need to be forgiven for that, those acts of body and speech that caused hurt out there in others. And so how this practice works is very much like metta. We're going to just close our eyes and we're going to repeat this phrase. I'm going to say it out loud 3 times to sort of get you into the rhythm of it. And if you need to peek at that thing I sent on in the chat, just because you forget halfway through, because we're going to spend about 5 minutes just tuning into this aspect of forgiveness. And here's the interesting thing. Often, now I've seen this both in myself and people have told me about this many, many times. You're just saying these phrases with no particular incident in mind, nothing. You're just like saying the phrases and tuning into the feeling of it. and people and things that you've totally forgotten about, who or you might have intentionally shoved away because you didn't want to think about them, they're going to come up. Pay attention to those. This is the mindfulness aspect of this practice. Like, oh, I'd forgotten all about that. Oh yeah, that thing. It's quite shocking sometimes what comes to mind when you just tune into this sort of open space of asking the universe for forgiveness, which is really all you're doing. You're just asking the universe for forgiveness and seeing what comes up as you do that. So find yourself a nice, comfortable seated position. Close your eyes. And I'll say this phrase three times to help you sort of get going. And then you just slowly repeat the phrase and tune into what arises in your heart and mind as you do this. Pay attention to that. If I've hurt or harmed anyone, knowingly or unknowingly, I ask for your forgiveness. If I have hurt or harmed anyone, knowingly or unknowingly, I ask for your forgiveness. If I've hurt or harmed anyone, knowingly or unknowingly, I ask for your forgiveness. And then just keep saying the phrase, repeating the phrase. I'm going to turn off my mic and we can all just practice for about 5 minutes. That includes anybody who happens to be listening to this recording. It's going to be about 5 minutes of silence on the recording for you to practice. So here's the thing. This is the formal practice. If things arose in your mind, you went, oh yeah, that or whatever, that person, that incident, that story, whatever. It might be, if the person is still around in your life in some way, alive, available, to actually consciously go to that person or those people and say exactly what you just said in your mind to them. Ask for forgiveness. It's like you're carrying this weight, this load of stuff, remorse, regret around, and asking for forgiveness allows you to release that, to let it go. And it's a real relief. Now, understand, you may have this in mind, and you'll go to somebody and you'll ask them for forgiveness, and they'll look at you like you're totally bonkers. Like, what are you talking about? Well, I don't remember that story at all. And it could be that it's all been in your head all this time. They had no idea that you had done all these horrible things or said these things or whatever. It might be like, or they've forgotten it completely, or it might be that they don't want to think about it because it brings up stuff for them. And so be prepared if you ask for forgiveness, don't expect anything. That's sometimes the hard part. So just act in a wholesome way, and then whatever arises, that's okay. But it can be a real big relief if you do that. So that's the first of these, asking for forgiveness. The flip side, forgiving others. Once again, Desmond Tutu. However, when I talk of forgiveness, I mean the belief that you can come out the other side a better person. A better person than the one consumed by anger and hatred. Remaining in that state locks you in a state of victimhood, making you almost dependent on the perpetrator. If you can find it in yourself to forgive them, then you are no longer chained to the perpetrator. Those stories we tell ourselves over and over and over again about how we've been done wrong by XYZ. And we all have stories like this. Every time that story comes up again, it never feels good. In fact, it always is really unpleasant, right? It's not like, I mean, even if you get into that sort of righteous indignation, aren't I, they were bad and I'm so wonderful vibe, it doesn't feel good. It never feels good. It's never wholesome. And it's often full of unwholesome things like anger and aversion, fear. All of those things might be there. And so, as long as we don't forgive that person or those people, we're chained to them. I think Desmond Tutu uses that. You're chained to those people, and these people might not even be in your life. They might have been dead. They might be 10 years since the last time you saw them. But as long as you keep telling that story to yourself, you're still chained to them, and you're still going to have to relive those unpleasant memories and emotional spaces again and again and again. It's just that's how it is. And we've all have things that have happened in our lives, unpleasant, difficult things that people have said and done. And we have stories about all of these. And we repeat them over and over again. And we're bound by these stories. And we get caught in the emotion again and again, the anger. And so, this practice of offering forgiveness is a way of breaking those chains. Remember what Sharon said. Forgiveness doesn't mean that we condone the act or that we have to love or even like the other person. Doesn't mean that at all. So it's not like, you're sort of being weak. You're actually being very strong. It simply means when you forgive someone, it simply means that you've given up ho all hope of a different past. I found this line in something I was reading once, and I just loved it. Simply means that we have given up all hope of a different past. Because often this is what these stories are. Look, we retell ourselves these stories over and over, thinking, oh, somehow or other it'll work out better. They never do. No matter how we vary them and all, if I said this and they said that and blah, 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 we always end up in that same unpleasant, unwholesome mind state. Because we haven't given up hope of a different past. The past is gone. All the past is thoughts and emotions that we keep coming around. It has no solidity, no validity, no truth at all, other than that's something that happened back there. That's it. It's just thoughts in the mind. But we're chained to those thoughts, these stories. So, same idea. We have another phrase. This is the second phrase. Anyone has hurt or harmed me, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive you. So it's the same idea, but just flipped over from the first one. And once again, as you're saying this phrase to yourself silently for about 5 minutes, see if people arise, stories, situations arise, and go, oh, can I not be chained by that story anymore? Can I let that go? Can I open my heart and just forgive? Not because it's going to make them better, it's because it's going to make me better, just like metta in the sense. It releases your heart. Okay, so once again, I will ask you all to close your eyes and sit. And I will repeat the phrases 3 times, and then we can see what happens over the next 5 minutes. If anyone has hurt or harmed me, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive myself. If anyone has hurt or harmed me, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive you. If anyone has hurt or harmed me, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive you. If anyone has hurt or harmed me, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive you. So just keep repeating that and let it stew a little bit in your heart mind and see if anything in particular arises. So once again, that someone in particular came up that someone you could actually sort of face to face forgive them. That might be a skillful thing to do. Understanding once again that this is, you're treading on delicate territory. The reaction you get might be like, who the hell are you to think I ever did anything wrong? I mean that's exactly where what someone how exactly someone might react. So don't be surprised and so be careful, very careful with this. But it is for having someone come and forgive you for some people just releases them because they're carrying this story around too. And letting them know that you sincerely forgive them might just take a huge weight off their heart mind. Might free them of the story. It might be a really wonderful thing for you to do for this person. And this doesn't mean, and remember this is really important, doesn't mean you want to hang out with this person again. Doesn't mean you love them or even like them. And you can make that really clear too. Just means that I forgive you. I'm not, I don't want to be chained to you anymore. I don't want this story to be part of my life anymore. I want to let it go. Okay, so that's the second form of forgiveness. The third form, forgiving ourselves. This is often the most difficult one. This is, it's because we have to start with, we have to accept that we have done and will do in the future unwholesome, unskillful things. That is part of being human to do so. And it's so much easier to sort of wallow in self-blame, to think of ourselves as bad or inadequate, not good enough. And our culture continually encourages us to think ourselves as broken and unworthy. All these things have stories attached to them too, stories we go over and over in our minds. At the same time, we are busily building a sense of a separate self, because every one of those stories you tell yourself stars you. I'm the star of all these stories, and these mind movies, and it. And this becomes your identity. It's like, I'm the person who did all these horrible things. I'm such a miserable person. Blah, blah, just whatever. We all have our own versions of these stories, so and our own ways of thinking about them, for that matter. But it is, it's not surprising that people get caught here, because, like I said, our culture encourages us to think this way. There is, I don't know if you ever hang out, I like bookstores, so there's always this huge section of books in a bookstore called something like self-help. Right? These are books that, if you just follow what that book says, it's going to solve all your problems. Right? You're going to figure it out, and everything is going to be okay. And I actually this is, I actually got this list a few years ago. This was from Amazon's top 10 self-help books at the time. But I'm sure if you went now, you'd find 10 totally different ones because these things come and go very quickly. But I just want to read you some titles and see to indicate what I'm talking about here. Here's one: Healing Your Emotional Self, a powerful program to help you raise your self-esteem. Quiet your inner critic and overcome your shame. Which, of course, you all have. That's why we need the book, right? Then there's When Am I Going to Be Happy? How to Break the Emotional Bad Habits That Make You Miserable. This one I love. Change Your Life and Everyone in It. Not only are you going to fix yourself, you're going to fix everyone else too. It's really, this is a real good one, right? The 10 best ever anxiety management techniques. The Success Principles, trademarked. How to get from where you are to where you want to be. Then these last two are just classics. The Single Woman's Sassy Survival Guide, Letting Go and Moving On. And then the universe doesn't give a flying beep about you. I use the word beep there intentionally, but these are the titles of books. And people, it's like it's so easy to think, I'll someone, a friend read this book and it just made everything okay. And this is an enormous industry, all based on the fact that we don't think very much about ourselves as being good people. That we are caught in these stories over and over again. One of my teachers, Carol Wilson, had this wonderful phrase that she used to describe how we are often in our culture and just in general. I'm a little piece of shit that the world revolves around. Does that resonate at all? It's like we beat ourselves up, but we're the center of the universe at the same time. That's how we create this self-image over and over and over and over again. So forgiving ourselves releases us from these unwholesome negative self-images. It's a way of letting them go. Okay. So this is the third form. Once again, I'll read the phrase, then we can practice. For the ways that I've hurt or harmed others or myself, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive myself. That's a mouthful, this one, but it covers all the bases, right? So now close your eyes and sit. I'll say this three times out loud, then you can repeat it to yourself for a while. For the ways that I've hurt or harmed others or myself, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive myself. For ways that I've hurt or harmed others or myself, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive myself. For the ways that I've hurt or harmed others or myself, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive myself. Once again, repeat the phrase, see what comes up, what the stories are that might arise as you tune into this energy. I want to read a little bit more of Sharon here. The sense of psychological and spiritual well-being that comes from practicing forgiveness comes directly because this practice takes us to the edge of what we can accept. This isn't easy, in other words. Right? Being on the edge is challenging, wrenching, and transforming. The process of forgiveness demands courage and a continual remembering of where our deepest happiness lies. As Goethe said, our friends show us what we can do, our enemies show us what we must do. It is indeed a process, which means that as you do the reflections, many conflicted emotions may arise: shame, anger, a sense of betrayal, confusion, or doubt. Try to allow such states to arise without judging them. Be mindful of them without making them a big deal. Recognize them as natural occurrences, just thoughts in the mind, and then gently return your attention to the forgiveness reflections themselves. So, why am I spending all this time talking about this? You may be asking at this point. It's because I've had very powerful personal experience around this practice. Must be 8 or 9 years ago now. I was part of a group of people who worked on various things together. And I, to be quite honest with you, spoke very unkindly and unmindfully and caused a lot of distress and upset with a lot of people I cared about. And I was just like racked with guilt. And I kept telling these stories about it to myself over and over and over again. And I couldn't find a way to work with this stuff. I mean, I'd be mindful of it and all, do all the things you're supposed to do when stories occur when you're mindful. And it just, they didn't go away at all. And then I was like, oh, I know. I'm going to sit for a month in February of the next year. This was in the fall, so it was like 3 months later. And I'll get to talk to Guy, my teacher, about this, and that'll help me figure this out, right? So I go on this retreat, and the very first time I get to talk to Guy in the practice meeting sense, I walk in the door talking, and I just can't stop talking the whole time. I just blurt out this whole story, and he just sits there and he listens very carefully. And I just sort of bare my soul essentially. And he says, "You need to do forgiveness practice." That's all he said. He said, "This is what you need to do." And then he taught me this practice and said, "Now for the rest of the retreat, this is a month-long retreat, one period every day, this is all you're going to do." So I did. It was intense because it brought up all those stories over and over and over again. That's, but it was like also very powerful in terms of learning to be okay with that stuff. And then I came back from retreat, and for my daily practice every day, the first 10 minutes of my daily practice for the first 6 weeks after this month-long retreat was doing this practice again. I just kept doing it and doing it. And what happened is things actually changed. All those stories just sort of melted away. It's the only way I can describe it. It was an incredible relief to not be caught, because there was like part of the story was, of course, I screwed up. Part of the story was, oh, those people, they reacted really poorly, they really screwed up. Part of it was, God, am I ever stupid? I'm, it's like, so I was asking forgiveness. I need to ask for forgiveness. I understood that, and I actually did when I got back to a couple of people. But I was also had to forgive people for how they reacted, and I had to forgive myself for being so stupid. And it was all bound together. And this practice really worked for me. It's testimonial time, right? I highly recommend this. If this is part of what you're dealing with in your life, or this comes up in your life, doing this practice can be very powerful as a way to work with these things. So I have a little bit of poetry, and then we'll have time for a few comments and questions, perhaps. This is just from Mary Alra's book, Evidence, and it's called Broken Unbroken, and it sort of describes the process I just explained in a sense. The lonely stand in dark corners of their hearts. I've seen them in cities and in my own neighborhood, nor could I touch them with the magic that they crave to be unbroken. Then I, myself, lonely, said hello to good fortune. Someone came along and lingered, and little by little became everything. That makes the difference. Oh, I wish such good luck to everyone. How beautiful it is to be unbroken. That's what this practice can do. It can get us from being broken to being, if not unbroken, somewhat less broken, perhaps at least. So that's all I have to say. So we just want, if you want to take some time to share how this worked for you, was it interesting? Was it like, oh my God, what's he yapping about? Anything in between, or anything you want to share, that's fine. And as I always say, don't feel at all obliged to say anything at all. Just if you feel like there's something you'd like to share, that would be fine.
Thank you, Barry. This really resonated with me. I really appreciate it.
Good.
I've done some things sim not formal like this, somewhat similar for forgiveness exercises like that. It's been I wrote a letter to my father, my deceased father, very much in the forgiveness. And I found it effective. Gave a little more reality, a little more realness to, I could see it wasn't so black and white as it was. But I really appreciate these. Thank you.
Oh, good. I just, if I'm seeing a little bit of forgiveness out there in the world, so much the better, as far as I'm concerned. Go ahead. Jeff, is that Jeff? Is
Yeah,
okay.
yeah. It's I'll say that this is much more intense than I expected. Like I didn't know what to expect going into it. Like you said, stories that I haven't thought about for years just kept coming up. Probably more stories than I had chances to repeat the phrases. So it was pretty overwhelming. And yeah, probably revealed that there's a lot of like unresolved tension that maybe I can work with using this practice. But yeah, so thanks so much for sharing and
Yeah, so make
yeah.
this part of your practice. Like I said, let's say the first 10 minutes of your practice every day, just do this for a while and see what happens.
Yeah,
See how
definitely.
that those stories shift and resolve a little bit, maybe.
For sure.
I don't know how to copy the chat. So, is it possible that you can email us the phrases? Because I to write it down now, it will just be too.
If
Oh.
you if you want to send me an email, Marcy,
Okay.
I will send you the phrases. That's how If people email me, I always remember. That's how my old brain needs reminders, right? So if you send me an email, please send me those phrases. I'll send them to you right away. Also, this talk is all
Great.
recorded, so you can listen to the talk again and get the phrases that way too. But I'll be happy to
That's
send you the
great.
actual. I can send you the actual phrases that just like what I loaded into the chat.
Okay. And just for me, the emphasis tonight was more on the part of forgiving myself. So I'm going to examine that more. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was a powerful one. I feel like it was very, lot could go in a lot of different directions, but I think this was the first night that I realized how much like focus is a part of this practice. Because now that we have all of these sort of like tools, like different meta practices and different people, and it the focus and actually repeating the phrases was what I was trying to do the most. I'm like, can I remember all these things? Can I actually get through this? So I think that helped me steer away from like the emotional side of it in a way. But I think if I get it down more in my head, it will become very emotional, if that makes sense. So
It's also okay to have the phrases right in front of you and peek if you start to stumble. It took me a while to get them down, and I actually carried a piece of paper around for the first week of my retreat, and I'd look at them just before I started the practice. I'd look at them and that helped me remember, and then I'd get caught in that emotional storm and oh, better go back to that phrase. And what was that phrase? And I'd open my eyes and look at the piece of paper. Perfectly valid thing to do.
thank you. Thank
But
you.
you are right that this takes concentration. Metta, all these forms of practice are very strong, powerful concentration practices as well. It's partly why I like them, because I'm a bit of a concentration addict as well. So. Okay, I think we've exhausted everybody for the evening. So let's just dedicate the merit of our practice. May the beneficial energies arising from our practice here together today become the causes and conditions for the end of suffering and the awakening of all beings everywhere.